2010-1451 Dell Products against the United States. Roll, when you're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Roll. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant Dell Products. With me today is Brett Harris. Your Honors, this is, in our area of practice in import-export customs law, this case is a case of first impression, and I believe it's the first time the court, the appellate court at least, is addressing the meaning of GRI 3, or General Rule of Interpretation 3. But it's of extreme importance to the trade community, because it's for thousands of administrative rulings that are out there, and the lower court case now, which also was the first trial court case interpreting this, there has been a practice, if you will, an understanding of what that term means. And I think actually the parties are in agreement on what the definition of that phrase, goods put up in sets for retail sets, for retail sale means, which is the trial court, the government in its brief, and us in our brief have always understood that to mean this three-part test that was quoted in the briefs and by the trial court that comes from the explanatory notes to the harmonized system. So there's definitely an area of agreement there, but we would submit that the main discussion or the areas of disagreement and where the court should focus its attention on is what does the word put up mean? But just briefly to recap the three-part test, one of the three elements, of course, we also agree is met here. There's no dispute as to that. But the three elements briefly are that the alleged set or kit has to consist of articles, at least two different articles that are classifiable in different tariff provisions. So what that element is doing in essence is, or this rule is doing, is saying, even though you have different articles put together, we're going to give it one tariff treatment. So you have to have different, what would otherwise be different tariff treatments.
Well, there's no problem if they're the same.
Correct.
That's just a predicate for getting into the
Set, the set area, right. Okay, so then we turn
to... It's silly to have that as a requirement, but go ahead.
I tend to agree with you actually on that, but it's a requirement nonetheless.
All right.
So there's the second and third criteria where, of course, all the play is, if you will, in this case. And they are, they consist of products or articles put up together to meet a particular need or to carry out a specific activity. And then they're put up in a manner suitable for sale directly to users without repacking, such as in boxes, cases, boards, etc. So in our case here, as you could tell from reading the briefs, the area of disagreement has to do with what does that word put up mean? The lower court and the government have suggested to you that that means offered for sale, and that because the articles in question, which are these laptop computers that are imported by Dell's customers with secondary batteries, where the customer, not Dell, said, oh, you know, when I order this computer, I want to order an extra battery with it.
Your problem is that it isn't just put up. Put up standing alone might mean packaged, but it says put up for sale, put up for retail sale.
Actually, in the phrase from GRI 3, it says goods put up in sets for retail sale. That's correct. I agree. Which is then defined with that three-part test. And in the three-part test, the third criteria says put up in a manner suitable for sale. And in our brief, we gave...
I don't know how that helps you. But, I mean, you do seem to ignore the for sale part of this test.
No, Your Honor, we... I would respectfully submit that we don't ignore the sale aspect of it.
Well, what does for sale mean?
Well, suitable for sale means, for example, our understanding or our read of that term is focusing on the fact that it has to be in a type of packaging, for example, not bulk packaging, but packaging that could be adapted as a type that would be recognized as being the type of packaging an article would be sold in. Not that there actually has to have been a sale. And that's why I said in the thousands of administrative rulings, which I would be the first to say are not binding on this court, but as far as what the practice has been in terms of interpreting that and therefore the understanding in the trade, has never been that there has to be an actual sale. If that were the case, you'd run afoul of the uniformity principle, which is that like goods should be classified the same way. And there's nothing that we, as far as we read the either the GRI-3 or the explanatory note, that says you're going to take the same good, and if it's sold, if it's imported pursuant to a sale, it's going to be taxed one way, and if it's imported, for example, on consignment, it's going to be taxed a different way, because you could have this. I don't understand
the government to be suggesting that.
But if the question is it has to be offered for sale, which was the lower court's opinion, I believe the government's position, that it has to be.
I don't understand that. I think the government's position is it has to be put up in a set that would be suitable for offering for sale, whether the offer for sale occurs before the importation or afterwards.
Your Honor, on the issue of for sale, all of that is looking back to sort of pre-import activity, right? I think then what you're questioning is before the importation, there must be some collection or holding out of the goods in a certain way that, yeah, they could be sold, they could not be sold. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's what the government's position is.
Right, and I guess, first of all, the tariff that this is based on is from 1989. Which is sort of pre-internet age, right? This case is coming about because we're in the age where the consumers, rather than a manufacturer or seller, is able to define what they would like to buy. So some of it, I think, is coming from that. But the government's position of focusing on the pre-import activity flies in the face of Citroen and a whole line of cases.
Well, let's take I understand the free trade zone issue here perhaps affects things a bit as the way we're looking at it. But let's suppose that what we have is a collection of goods that I want to order from Mexico. And I'm interested in getting some baseball equipment. So I go on to the internet and I order a bat. And I decide, you know, I think I'd like a glove too. And I'd like a ball and I'd like some baseball shoes. And in Mexico, the factory, the fellow that's got the factory runs over here, he gets a bat. He runs over here, he gets some shoes, he gets the ball, gets the glove, and puts them all in a box and sends them to me. Have they been put up for retail sale, or have they just been tossed in a box after the order was placed?
I think that actually hits the nail right on the head with
well,
that example.
This is the sort of critical question.
But if we could explore that for a minute. I guess if we could explore that for a minute.
Right.
So using your example where, yes, in common language, they've been put into a box and now they're shipped to you. They show up at your front door.
And they're all designed to carry out a specific activity, allow
right.
me to play
Presumably
baseball.
There would be no question about that. We're just
right.
talking
all
about...
Right. We're just talking about the put up for retail sale.
Okay. We would submit that in that case, that third criteria, put up in a manner suitable for sale. The question becomes, what type of packaging must there be for it to be suitable for sale? Right, if it's coming to you just...
Well, there was no packaging at all until I called or until I sent my internet order in. And then the only packaging that occurs was they took these things off the shelves and tossed them into a single box, put tape around the box, and sent it to me.
But
is
clearly,
that,
Your Honor...
Is that a retail... Is that a set put up as a set for retail sale?
Yes, and I would submit to you, yes, mm-hmm. and here's why.
Okay.
Yes, it is because, number one, at the time of importation, when the goods are crossing the border into Texas or wherever they're crossing, they're in packaging. You are a retail consumer in your example, and it's in a packaging that's suitable for that sale.
Let me see if I can help you a little bit. Suppose we look to the UCC. If I understand the UCC, under those circumstances, the sale doesn't take place until the items are delivered.
Correct.
So at the time of importation, they're packaged for sale, the sale
that's
taking place when the items are delivered to the customer. That would be a better argument, wouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, in this, and you said it perhaps more artfully than I did, but the point is that Citroen is mandating we examine the goods at the time they hit the border. At the time they hit the border, they're in packaging that is suitable for the sale that's about to take place. I mean, I guess the problem that we have with the lower court decision and with the government's position is that it's forcing...
So what this would do is if baseball bats could come in free and you'd say, well, you know, the basic product you bought here, the most expensive item, is the baseball bat, then the shoes become, in effect, for tariff purposes, a baseball bat.
That is correct.
And therefore, even though shoes may be... they have a 10% tariff on them that they come in for free.
Correct, which is not...
Which is a peculiar notion. I mean, it's one thing to say that options that are packaged with the item become, in effect, part of the item. It's another thing. I mean, you know, you buy a camera and you want a lens and some filters, and they all come in a package. You get a lens and you get three filters, and this is the option package that we have on the shelf. You order it, you get it. The filters become part of the camera. That sort of feels sensible. My baseball example, it doesn't feel right. Tell you the truth.
What doesn't feel right? That you're going to...
The shoes become the baseball bat.
I mean, of course, there's an assumption in the example that the bat would be the one that gives it the essential character.
The nice thing about hypotheticals is I get to make those assumptions real.
But that is the nature of that's the nature of GRI3, which is to say, I mean, it may be, and it doesn't always work, that it gets to the lower example. Sometimes, and Lord knows, there are plenty of administrative rulings which go uncontested where actually the central character is at a higher duty rate. In your hypothetical, on those facts, it happened to be the lower rate.
Yeah.
So I think that just becomes a fact-specific exercise. But again,
and if you decided that the package really wouldn't hold the shoes, and you put the shoes in a separate package and you sent them both to me at the same time, different outcome?
Potentially. Those are not our facts here, I should add. But
I understand. You're careful to put them both in one box, but if you had two boxes and they arrived at my door and on the same day, as often happens with these things.
Sure.
Different outcome.
I would argue, yes, different outcome. If I had to make the decision, yes, different outcome. In fact, to your point, Your Honor, I believe there's been some discussion in Brussels about furniture sets. You can imagine a big furniture umbrella, an outdoor patio. Those don't lend themselves necessarily to a box because of their size. And I believe there's been some discussion if they're in different boxes, does that defeat the set classification? But again, those are not our facts here. I'd like to, if I can, reserve the balance of my time, which is about 8 minutes.
Good morning.
Ms. Rubin. Good morning.
Yes, Judge Weiser.
Does the sale take place upon the delivery to the customer?
Well, everything the retail customer can do to complete that sale has already been done.
No, you're not answering my question. Under the UCC.
I'm not a UCC expert. I don't know. I'll take your word for the fact that under the UCC, perhaps, delivery is the final step.
Is the sale. The sale doesn't take place until the delivery.
Honestly, I'm not a UCC expert. That was... I did some UCC law 20 years
ago,
but I don't recall.
Let's assume that that's correct, that the delivery, the sale takes place upon the delivery to the customer. This is then susceptible to an interpretation that it's put up, packaged for sale, the sale taking place later, right?
Wrong.
Respectfully. Okay.
There's a number of reasons why Dell's position should fail here. The principal one, or the simplest one to even comprehend, is that retail customers do not put up goods for sale. Sellers do. Since Dell, as the seller, did not make the decision as to what goods would be grouped together and for shipment to retail customers, the groupings cannot be said to be goods put up together for retail sale.
But the sale takes place on the delivery. Why can't it's being packaged for delivery to the customer? So it's
because
it's
the
for sale, right? Huh?
The sale, the packaging or the putting up or the offering, it really, the argument over the phrase put up is really a non-issue because you could put what Mr. Roll is pressing as package or what the court found to be correct as offered or displayed for sale, it all fits. It has to be in anticipation of a sale.
So you're saying that the date on which the sale formally takes place is not governing because these are put up for sale in anticipation of sale.
That is
in advance of the sale, etc.
That is correct. Right.
The for sale means offered for sale.
For sale means in anticipation of a sale.
Offered for sale as opposed to the conclusion of the sale.
Correct. And the only decision a retail customer has to make with respect to a GRI 3B set is buy it or don't buy it. But that's exactly the opposite of the way Dell sells its products, the way these products came into being in the same box. The ability of a retail customer to choose from a whole buffet of individually priced and individually offered products defeats the purpose of GRI 3B.
Now, would you agree that if Dell, and they do, sold a group of products together as option A, you can get the following set of items. Option B is another set of items, a slightly trimmed down set, and option C is the really bare bones, but you still get a couple of options along with your basic computer. If they had those three options, and then the fourth choice is you just do it a la carte. You pick each and every item that you want. That the first three would satisfy the requirements of the GRE, assuming that they had them boxed together?
No.
And why not?
Because at the beginning of your question, you said, as Dell does. I actually have bought a Dell computer, and I know that those options are themselves fully customizable. They're simply suggestions of what groupings might go together.
Well, okay, let's suppose it's not Dell, but it's somebody else who the options are fixed. You choose this option, that's what you get. Sort of the ways cars are. I mean, if you choose the X option, this is the collection of features you get. But if you want, you can click on, I want to customize my order. But you don't. If you order either option A or option B or option C, that would be put up together for retail sale, correct?
Yes, at a fixed price.
Even though there's bunches of options. You could have any A through C or A through L in terms of your package options. But each of the package options would satisfy the GRE?
If each package is fixed for a fixed price,
right,
and there's no substitutions allowed, yes. Okay. Each of those could absolutely be a set put up for retail sale.
What do you mean that no substitutions allowed? Because in the hypothetical, it can be customized. You can say, well, I like option A, but I want to substitute this thing for that thing. I understand that when the substitution takes place, you would say that that's no longer put up for sale. But the fact that substitutions are possible and that you can create a customized package doesn't deprive option A of being a retail set.
I might have misunderstood the hypothetical.
Well, actually, I think Judge Dyke carried the hypothetical one step farther, but that's a good it's a good point to tease out. You, as I understand your position, you would say you would not say that if you can modify the fixed option, that fixed option is at this point still a set, right?
Well, actually,
as long as it's just sort of a proposed group of a starting point for your customized menu.
I should really take a step back and not be so emphatic in agreeing with your hypothetical, because the assumption that I was making with your options was that they all contribute to a specific activity or to a primary purpose.
Sure.
If in your car option, if you have a bunch of different packages, but you also get, you know, I don't even know what else could it be. You could get a bicycle as a bonus.
No, we can assume.
So my assumption
was we're staying with the same activity.
Okay. If they all serve the primary purpose, if it was customizable, then you would, in fact, be in the same situation we're here now, because we have a functional unit consisting of a computer, a power cord, and a primary battery.
Everything else in the box is optional. We're not in the same place we are now, because they didn't offer this as a set together for a fixed price. But the hypothetical says, suppose they did offer a combination of the computer and the secondary power source and other related things as part of a single option A for $1,514. But you could say, well, I don't want option A. I want to make my own package. Does the fact that you can make your own package change it from being a retail set?
It does, because it's no longer the seller putting up the product as a grouping for retail sale.
I don't understand that. I'm sorry.
To to put GRI 3B allows for a peculiarity. As we all know, goods are supposed to be classified as they are entered or imported. GRI 3B allows for a variation on that, where shoes might be classifiable as baseball bats. Or in this case, Dell, which doesn't disagree that a battery is classifiable as a battery when imported separately, Dell now says this battery should be classified as a computer.
So the only way you can, according to you, the only way you can get the benefit of the retail set is to tell the customer there's no way that you can buy these items individually. You either take it or leave it, and we only sell these things in sets.
Well, it sounds a little harsh, but that is what GRI 3B requires. GRI 3B allows for a specific benefit.
Hold on a minute now. Let me make sure I understand your answer to that. If I understand our hypothetical, and we said sharing aspects of the hypothetical, but this would be the situation. Let's say Hewlett-Packard, so we get away from Dell, is selling a group of options, which if you buy that option, you get everything in the package, and it's in a box that's sitting there in the warehouse ready to go if you ask for option A. You can say, I want option A, but I don't want the additional battery, in which case they will take the items in option A, take out the battery, and sell it to you, in effect, a la carte. You still treat the box, I take it, as a set put up for retail sale, and anybody that orders the box, that gets treated as a set, even though people who order something other than the contents of the box, which they're perfectly free to do, those items get treated separately. Isn't that what you're saying, or is it?
Because no. In fact, that's pretty much how Dell does sell their stuff. You can remove
well, not this battery. Particular product, well, right?
Can I clarify your hypothetical?
Yes,
is
please.
Is the price adjusted when you remove the battery?
Sure.
Then it's not a set because it's not fixed.
Well,
it's not,
but the set,
it's not
but
a
the
unit.
Set that I. They do have a set of the, let's say, a computer and a, I don't know, speakers, let's say, and so forth. That set, they'll sell you for $1,100. And that's option A, fixed. Now, you can go a la carte and get the same computer without the speakers for $1,050. The fact that you can go a la carte doesn't render the set any less a set, does it?
If the set is not immutable, then yes. And you're saying you can remove the battery.
Well,
and
it's
the
immutable
price will be
if you order the set, that's what you get. And for a special price, you can't change it.
Well, remember, it's not simply the word set. It's set put up together for retail sale that we're referring to.
Can I get, just clarify what's
sure.
coming up? In this particular case, mm-hmm. What the government allowed was that the primary battery and the power cord get packaged up. That was okay. That was all included
that
in the computer.
That was classifiable
item.
As a functional unit. Yes, those were...
Well, if in that case, we happen to know, and I don't know whether it's correct or not, if a customer could come into Dell and say, look, I don't need your primary battery and your power cord, so just give me $1,500 off the set and I just want to buy the computer, mm-hmm. that wouldn't lead the government to then say, no, we're not going to treat this as a set, right? It's still treated as a set because that's the way it's put up for sale, right?
Respectfully, no. And that's why I specifically just said that those were classifiable as a functional unit. There's a difference between a functional unit and a GRI 3B set. Functional units under the, I forget which section number, it's the section that includes the automatic data processing equipment, that's GRI 1 because that's pursuant to a section note. So functional units, which is what the primary battery, the power cord, and the computer would be, We're at GRI 1 at this point, so we're not talking sets at all. We're talking sets only when you add that function, all this other stuff to a functional unit, which is what we're talking about here. And so it's kind of apples and oranges. I mean, Dell did make a functional unit argument down below. It was rejected, and it's not here on appeal.
But let's suppose there's a set put up of, items A, B, and C, and you're not allowed to make any substitutions, but you don't have to buy sets. There's also an a la carte menu, and you can assemble individual items from the a la carte menu, but it's not referred to as substituting things in the set.
Right.
Is the set then a retail set?
Maybe. It depends.
I thought you would. Your answer would be, of course.
Noncommittal.
So what if you can buy things a la carte? That doesn't affect the question of... I mean, so, let me give you an example from an industry I actually know something about. Importing telescopes from China. Typically, consumer telescopes are sold in a package. You get the telescope, you get three eyepieces, and you get a finder scope. It's a single package. It's a set, right?
Yes, it should be. Is it, sure. It presumably it's advertised that way.
It's advertised. You get a special break on price. It's all in the same box. Well, it's ready to go.
It's right. Also limited by either the supplier or the importer, not the retail
customer.
Right.
That's right. But you know what? Many of those companies, if you ask them to buy the eyepiece separately, to buy an eyepiece, just, I want an eyepiece. I want the same eyepiece that comes with your set. They'll say, sure, we'll sell you the eyepiece. That doesn't somehow disentitle them
absolutely
to
not.
Treatment. Well, that was just Stike's question.
Well, then, maybe I zoned out. I apologize. No.
I mean, the fact that you've got an a la carte option out there doesn't mean that the sets are no longer sets.
By no means.
Okay.
For example, we have an example of a ruling, and I'll speak very quickly because I see I only have 17 seconds, of a foreign trade zone that put together, in the foreign trade zone, they put together a camera, a few lenses, and some of the goods had been brought in and duty paid, and some of them were brought in afterwards. And that was a set. It was advertised in catalogs as a grouping, a fixed grouping for a specific price. And when it came out of the foreign trade zone, the condition was as a set. And Customs had no problem classifying that under GRI 3B because the grouping was fixed, offered for sale, displayed for sale as a unit
before the retail. Your problem is if the seller will open the packaging and substitute things in.
Effectively.
What you want them to do is to say, no, you know, these sets come the way they are. We're not going to open that package and substitute something else in it. But if you want to buy it a la carte, you can do it. That's sort of the line you're drawing.
Sort of. If it's a grouping where the retail customer is given the option of buy it or don't buy it, it's probably a set put up together for retail sale because it's not the retail customer that can modify the grouping. Thank you. Is there anything else?
I'm sorry. Did you have a thought you were going to complete?
No, you look like you might have another question.
Oh, no. That's
thank you very much.
Thank you. And let's see. Mr. Roll, you have several minutes.
Thank you. This is actually very interesting to actually sit down and listen to because a lot of the hypotheticals and the fact patterns that everyone was grappling with I think are exactly the things that the decision in Citroen and in this court's decision in Meta Copystar were designed to avoid, which is to get into these factual determinations of exactly what happened, how was it fixed, did you offer the a la carte option, all of which is looking at things prior to import. Right? In the Citroen case where the pearls were worn in Paris before they were actually brought in here loose, the Supreme Court in that case said, no, what happened in Paris stays in Paris. What we care about is at the border, were they strung or unstrung? And that was determinative for that case. And here, I think, in this case, as a matter of policy, it makes a lot more sense to, using the example, I don't remember if it was yours, Judge Bryson's, or yours, Judge Dyke, about you have option A, B, C, which are all sort of fixed items, and then option D was the you can build your own. And in option D, if we pretend the consumer built their own that wound up being the same as option A, you're going to have two goods coming in that are going to be treated differently. Under the government's view and the lower court's view, option A, because it was fixed prior to import, would get one tariff treatment, yet option D, because it was built up a la carte, will not. Same thing if you take out a good, right? You could have the set have one tariff treatment if it's fixed and they bought the price fix menu, if you will. And then if they take out a battery, it won't be. But yet, if that same seller starts to say, well, you know, a lot of people, they're taking out the extra battery or they're adding an extra battery. And they say, well, you know, starting next month, let's just put up there as a menu choice, if you will, computer with two batteries. Then we've satisfied the government's criteria of being fixed and somehow held out there. Yet the imports that came in the first month before they did that option, the fixed option, are going to get one duty treatment, and the imports in February or the next month will not.
Yeah, but your problem is with the language, and it's not put up, which does mean packaged. It's for sale. And if you look at the dictionary, for sale doesn't mean sold. It means offered for sale, exhibited for sale. So for sale probably means put up and exhibited for sale. So what's your response to that?
Well, it isn't just on that language. I believe that was your first question to me in the first half of my presentation earlier. When you say that the problem we have is that the language says for sale, you're reading from GRI 3, I believe.
Right.
Which is the statute. That's what you're charged with interpreting. But we're all in agreement, at least in the lower court and here in our briefs, that what that phrase means is that three-part test. And the three-part test in the third criteria speaks about suitable for sale. So the
sounds like exhibited for sale, offered for sale, suitable for sale. It doesn't sound as though it's dealing with the actual final sale of the item.
But doesn't suitable for sale, and I know there was some discussion of this in the government's brief, is foreseeing, you're reading the word for sale as a future event that will take place.
Well, that's the way the dictionary tends to define it.
I would be the first to concede and say that is a reading of how that could be read. But I think it's equally plausible, and particularly when one looks at the explanatory notes and the thousands of other rulings that have been issued by the agency, that's not been the reading of it, meaning is there actually a sale that's taking place. Rather, the reading has been, is it of a kind that could be sold, which is focusing on, again, its packaging, how it was packaged. The last thing I wanted to just add, and I know I'm almost out of time here, just as, again, as a policy matter, if you were to uphold the lower court decision, it seems to me that it's going to, I don't want to say defeat e-commerce, but it's certainly working against the trend of how business is running, because then the solution will be, if you're Dell, okay, let's, instead of having the customer choose a la carte, what we'll do is we'll come up with every possible permutation we can think of. We'll have millions of web pages that the consumers are going to have to go through to find the exact one that matches what their a la carte combination is going to be, and that certainly can't be good as a policy matter to force companies to have so many web pages. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Ms. Rubin. Okay.